Comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast.
Serotalk podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Locke.
Welcome to Serotalk.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 58 for January 3, 2011. This is Michael Loff.
I'm Ricky Enger.
Two Tech Chats since our last podcast. First, Tech Chat 83 with JJ Meadow and Jamie Pauls. 2010 Access Tech Highlights and Letdowns. It was a whopping two-hour presentation because we had so many questions and a lot of comments from the Twitter sphere. But we held it in the afternoon, and I was kind of excited about that.
It was great to see all of the interaction, people talking on Twitter and people submitting questions directly through Accessible Event. And we covered quite a lot on that tech chat. By the way, speaking of Twitter, Serotech now has an official Twitter feed, and you can check that out at twitter.com/Serotech.
Yes, and also in Tech Chat 82, Nolan Derelick, author of The Spiel Screen Reader for Android Phones, joined us along with Chris Millsap and Peter Bosley. And we discussed the current state of Android accessibility and how it is going backwards in some ways, which is a most unfortunate thing. And you can check out all of those, of course, over at serotalk.com. First of all, I do want to congratulate our 2010 Serotech podcast winners. We had a contest. Three folks sent in their favorite podcast or tech chat moment from 2010, and we had two $25 Serotech gift cards and one $50 card. The two winners of the $25 gift cards for Serotech software and voices were Esten Talavera. He liked podcast 55 on DocuScan Plus, as well as our announcement of the accessible Apple TV. Also winning there was Jess Smith, who voted for podcast 49 and Mike Cabo's rant on the NLS, which was certainly, without a doubt, mentioned as the number one item from over half of the entries we got mentioned podcast 49 and Mr. Mikey, and the winner of the $50.
People like rants, I guess.
I guess they do. They like a little controversy. But the winner of the $50 Serotech gift card is Dan Kerstetter, who also mentioned podcast 49, and that he is enraged to think that we have to buy a Kindle reader and then have to tell its developers how to improve its accessibility. And says it's nice and maybe great for CEOs who have a few extra dollars to spend. Well, thanks for your thoughts there, Dan. Of course, the names were chosen randomly, and in a perfect world, we wouldn't have to tell any companies how to improve accessibility, but that's not going to happen for quite some time. Anyway, but congratulations to our three winners, and thank you to all of you who put in your 2 cents. You can purchase a Serotech gift card for anyone at any time, in any amount, for any occasion at serotech.com/gift card. Okay, on to the good stuff. All the news that is news, or that we think it's news, that's why we report it as news, starting in the wonderful world of iPhone.
Think, therefore it is.
Yes. Well, I had a news director that used to say, it's news when I say it's news. So how about, there's a little ego going for you.
There you go.
Speaking of controversy, some are upset that the maker of a particular app has given his reason for charging blind folks $4.99 to give voiceover accessibility to an app that everyone else can buy for 99 cents. It's version 2.0 of an app called Awareness and helps people to hear important sounds in their environment while listening through headphones. It features 6 in-app purchases, including 1 for persons to enable voiceover accessibility. SNC co-founder says the extra cost comes from the added expense of development required to make the program called Awareness accessible through VoiceOver. They first tried to just simply label buttons and custom controls, but that was insufficient, and it required a dual interface. So this has caused quite a bit of debate. This came up for discussion in Tech Chat 83. One person suggested, why not just charge $1.99 or twice the amount for the app and make the price equal for all people? I don't know, Ricky, I'd like your 2 cents on this. I'm of the feeling, I say, let's go for the free market. And if a company wants to charge a little bit extra for it, they can do so. And then we as consumers can decide that, yes, we'll buy it, or no, we will not. unless we pay the same price as everyone else. And I guess the big thing that gets me is, in a way, it's a double standard, because you're saying, I don't want to pay one more cent than anyone else. But yet, on the other hand, you will pay $300-$500 for a ghetto blind product, maybe even thousands of dollars for a product specifically for the blind with substandard technology, maybe even lacking a screen. I mean, I'm all about the free market. As it said, it's one of six in-app purchases. But maybe even better is that Mark Taylor, Candle Shore blog, will be interviewing this gentleman, if you happen to hear this, before the evening of Friday, January 7th, and you will be able to speak directly with Alex and find out his reasoning and logic and maybe voice your opposition. But Ricky, am I off base on my views on this?
Not per se, no. I agree that the free market is a good idea and that people should decide to pay for what they want. And if they disagree with a developer charging more for accessibility, then they don't have to pay for it. My concern is that if other developers are watching what's going on with this particular saga, are they going to get the idea that A, accessibility costs a great deal more to build in than to not do so? And B, are they going to think, based on the small number of users who have purchased the accessibility as an extra feature, you know, that the market is very, very small? Well, hey, these people didn't pay for accessibility, so it must not be that important.
Yeah, and certainly I'm concerned about it setting a precedent. Well, we can charge blind folks more, even if the app is basically accessible anyway. I don't know at what point this would violate Apple's terms of service for posting apps to the store.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so we will definitely report on this event as it unfolds, and I certainly do want to participate in the January 7th event that Mark Taylor will be hosting over the Candle Shore blog and get to hopefully not just listen to, maybe speak with Alex. And he makes some valid points. I mean, they're not going to, even charging $4.99 for this 99-cent app, they're not going to recoup the cost that they invested with their developers. So, I don't know. We'd like to hear your 2 cents, though. Resources at serotalk.com. In iPhone land, Skype 3.0 for the iPhone now offering video calls, although some say the problem is that the video button itself is unlabeled. So they're having challenges enabling that, but it works for the 4 and the 3GS. So if you want the benefit of making video calls through Skype on your iOS device, you can do so. And that's kind of cool that maybe family members can see you, or maybe if you need help with them looking at something for you without having to come over to your place or something. So check that out.
I haven't tried this yet, but I do like the idea that I guess Skype is a little more standard than FaceTime. You know, if you're using FaceTime, you've got to be communicating with somebody who's on a Mac or an iPhone 4 or another supported Apple device. But with Skype, you can be calling people on their machines or their iPhones or whatever. So I like that it's a little more standard.
Yeah, we'll have to see how well it works, how well it holds up, if the voice quality is degraded to support video. And I just really haven't played with it yet. I've installed it and just haven't played with it yet. So we'll come back and tell you more about that in the future. Another cool iPhone app's called SongMaker, and it allows you to create songs with voice pitch correction. Can you say auto-tune? But, you know, can't sing, no problem. It'll correct it for you. And we heard some last week, Scott Rakowski, and I think a couple others posted some stuff. They were playing around with it. So check out SongMaker if you've been looking for something to, as in Scott's case, make a special song for your sweetie or just play around with it. Seemed like a pretty cool little app. Well, if you're looking for a folding Bluetooth keyboard that also has a numpad, we found one, a Canadian company called Matias, M-A-T-I-A-S, and this product sells for $99. Now, I didn't know. I was also told that Apple has a full-size Bluetooth keyboard with the numpad.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, supposedly for $69, but it, of course, is non-folding. So I'm not sure, but I have been told that. So if you do want the numpad and your Bluetooth keyboard, definitely look through options or call up 1-800-MY-APPLE and ask them what's going on there. And finally, in iPhone land, a new blog post outlines 57 iOS Bluetooth keyboard commands. Yay, I was looking for something like that, so very exciting to find that out. So you can check that out. We got a link at serotalk.com. Now, a few things from the Apple rumor mill. By Valentine's Day, it has been reported that Apple should be announcing that there will be an iPhone for Verizon users. And there's millions of people that will be all too ready to either switch from AT&T or change the phone they currently have. Maybe they live in an area where Verizon is the only reliable option for them. And another report also confirms that the product will be launched, an actual iPhone for Verizon. So it'll be interesting to see if I really believe it's going to happen, but more importantly at this point, I would say when it's going to happen and when it will be available. And a few things on the iPad rumor mill. It says that Apple may be adding a USB port to their next-gen 2.0 iPad device. Of course, those will be coming out in April. And also, a report that was originally available, a story that we looked at, but now it looks like you have to log in and even pay to read, says that there are three different models of the iPad being designed. So we'll be curious to see how that's going to play out.
Well, as long as they all contain a gyroscope, I'm okay with it.
Exactly, because we all need to throw that bad boy around just a little bit. In the wonderful world of tech news, it looks like nearly half of iPhone apps, or at least half of the 100 apps that were tested, as well as almost an equal number of Android apps, are transmitting a lot of personal data about us. Wall Street Journal tested 101 apps and basically found that of those, 56 of the apps sent device unique serial numbers to advertisers for tracking purposes. It says that 47 of the 101 apps made some use of user location data, and 5 sent very specific user data, either age, gender, or other user-specific data, to outsiders. Now, it did say that iPhone apps, on average, transmitted a little bit more data than Android apps, but keep in mind this was only 100 apps of over 300,000 in the iOS store and almost 100,000 for Android devices. So it did make some important points, though, that users certainly cannot stop adware on their phones like we can our computers, nor can we, to my knowledge, install any type of firewall to prompt us to ask for permission before sending data to third parties, nor can we really remove cookies. I'm not aware of any kind of window washer or anything that'll go in and just strip cookies out either. So, Microsoft Security Essentials 2.0 has been released after 4 months in beta. 2.0 adds Windows firewall integration, network traffic inspection, and heuristic scanning engine, which basically means it has a better way of detecting patterns that can cause viruses. One of the downsides, it says there could be an increased number of false positives that come as a result, that meaning it telling you that you have a virus or Trojan when you really don't. Also, it talks about that the firewall has been integrated. You can actually make adjustments to it within Microsoft Security Essentials itself. It does say that XP users will not be able to benefit from the network inspection component of it. That does require Windows Vista or Windows 7 to take advantage of that. And it does say that MSE also works better with Internet Explorer to prevent web-based scripts from running. Basically, before it kind of worked in a way where it had to be written to the cache first, which by then could be too little too late. It is free for home users and businesses using 10 computers or less. And if you are already using Microsoft Security Essentials, it should already be installed, or you should have been prompted to update. That came out a little bit before Christmas. So I feel comfortable with it now as a product. Fred Langa has tested it well over 6 months, highly rates it. So if you're either just totally opposed to paying for security software or assisting someone building their computer or performing maintenance and they don't wish to spend any money, I think Microsoft Security Essentials is the way to go to give them a decent level of security. Looks like Sears and Kmart are launching their own movie download service called Alpha Line.
We have enough of those.
Oh, yeah. That's all we need is more, more, more. Called Alpha Line Entertainment. It basically uses Roxio Now. That basically is currently only available to U.S. residents. You can rent movies for $3.99 or purchase a movie for $19.99. It's similar to a service that Best Buy offers, which I also never used, called Cinema Now. Also with similar pricing.
I don't know how they're going to make this work with that pricing. I mean, $19.99, you can buy it on Blu-ray for that, and $3.99 for a rental, whereas you could probably stream the same thing with a Netflix subscription for far cheaper.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the rental prices may be in line. It seems like even some of the stuff in the Apple store is even $4.99. So I think it depends on what the content is. So yeah, obviously let the market be your guide there. But if you're interested in that for any reason, it's alphaline.roxio.net, I believe, or something like that. Anyway, we'll have the link over at serotalk.com. An article here, kind of interesting, tells us of 10 alternate search engines to Google for getting answers. And some of these other options, some of these other options include many things I have not heard of. Of course, the first one you may be familiar with called Yahoo Answers. A lot of these are based on the premise of submitting questions. There's the popular Reddit, it's R-E-D-D-I-T, which is kind of based on social networking, so comments that people have posted through Twitter and Facebook, as a lot of these suggestions are.
There was Twitter itself.
Twitter itself.
I think that ranked as number 2 or 3.
Yes, Twitter was number 2, and the number 1 service that was similar is called Aardvark, and the reason they rated it number 1 is that it provides the same functionality as Twitter, only you don't have to have followers to get your answers. But so talk about that, Ricky. God, I used Twitter for probably 2 years before I even thought about just asking my followers a question. And it's what a great source of information.
It really is. And I find myself asking all the time. I was asking for reviews on a particular set of microphones recently because I knew that I followed several audiophiles and I thought they might have interesting things to say, and they did. So, I mean, you can pretty much ask any question that you have, even something that would be relatively easy for you to find out yourself, maybe a hotkey for how to do something or whatever, but it seems to be a little easier to just type those 140 characters and get an almost instantaneous response from people watching your feed than it is to go and look the thing up. And that could be a good or a bad thing, but you'll start losing followers if you sort of abuse that too much, I would think.
Yeah, don't be lazy. I hate when people ask a question that could easily be looked up. I mean, certainly there are certain things that are more common, or, you know, sometimes it's a factor of convenience, so don't abuse it. But certainly if you do have a question, I use it for things that are a little off the beaten path and not just anyone's going to know.
Exactly. And if you do abuse it, your followers will let you know. There were some great items on this list, like Wikipedia, which is no surprise, and Wolfram Alpha, which you can ask the most interesting questions and get the most interesting answers. I remember having made some strange comment. I enjoyed an iced green tea from Panera Bread, and I said something about, I wish I had 40 gallons of this stuff, and was able to look that up on Wolfram Alpha and discover that that would be 2.3 bathtubs of iced green tea would make 40 gallons. So always the useful stuff you can discover.
Oh, that one's making me yawn a little bit, but no, seriously, being tired is not always a symptom of not getting enough sleep. Did you know that? Many foods. I mean, we always know of certainly eating too much, you know, Thanksgiving being the great example of everyone falling asleep after the event. But Scientific American says the number one common item is sucrose, basically your common table sugar, and also included in many different desserts. What happens is then we make more insulin in our body to counter this sugar, which in turn makes our brain produce more serotonin and the sleepy stuff melatonin that people actually go out and buy pills to create in their body. So the biggest suggestions, of course, are don't overeat. And this one was interesting. Just kind of put your head forward down there, you know, to your knees, basically increasing the blood flow to the brain every few minutes to help increase oxygen and wake yourself up.
Yep. And the other big one, drink water. Dehydration can really make you feel quite sleepy, and just drinking a lot of water can really help your body to wake up a bit.
The one thing I didn't mention, I know, is turkey, which has a tryptophan, which is a big sleepy food category. So stay away from the turkey if that bothers you. Well, in the wonderful world of radio, because our blind folks always love their radio, the U.S. Senate passes a community radio bill, basically to increase the number of low-power FM stations, basically 100 watts, which I don't know what that'll go six, seven, 8 miles, depending upon how good of a radio you have. And one of the things that was interesting to me is that this came up a few years ago and it got shot down, of course, by the big boys and commercial radio and, of all people, reading services that were afraid that the signals of these low power stations would interfere with their broadcasts. But it was approved this time, and it is going to be used for community groups and churches and schools to start their own. And here's where we see the big boys still got their way. Non-commercial stations. Yes, you're not going to make any money at this bad boy. Although some folks have very successfully set up 501c3s and actually made more money than running a commercial venture. I mean, a 100-watt station, you know, is not going to bring in a lot of revenue. Although I think it is pretty cool. I mean, that's something I could see myself getting involved with, you know. But hopefully it will restore some level of local radio. My observation, most of these seem to go to churches. So it's just a lot of low power stations broadcasting the same stuff that some of the larger ones are. But we'll see what happens with that. I'm all for any kind of local and community radio in whatever fashion. We have something here called Access 2020 going on in Canada. They're basically asking their CTRC, I guess that's Canadian Radio and Television Commission. Basically, they want fully described TV within the next decade by 2020 rather than taking 30 years as it currently stands today. And supporters for this include some pretty big disability organizations in Canada, including the CNIB, Canadian Hard of Hearing Association, Canadian Council for Disabilities, and the March of Dimes of Canada are all joining on to this. Well, JetBlue. Have you ever flown JetBlue? I have not.
I never have, and apparently if I had, I might not have had such a good experience because these guys are being fined, I believe, $600,000. Some of that money is actually going to be used to make improvements to their services, but basically they were not providing the proper assistance for boarding and deboarding the plane for those with disabilities, including those in wheelchairs and so on.
Yeah, it looks like $350,000 of it is going to have to be paid to the DOT or Department of Transportation, but the other $250,000 may be used to improve services for the disabled. This was interesting to read what is actually required by law. So if you ever have had a problem on an air flight, it would take time to submit a formal complaint because it says right here that law mandates that all airlines provide assistance with boarding and exiting the planes. And that includes not only blind persons, but also wheelchairs, ramps, mechanical lifts, or actual service personnel when needed. And the carriers must respond within 30 days to written complaints that outline treatment of the disabled passengers. And the airlines also must specifically address the issues raised in each complaint. And airlines must submit annual reports of these complaints from the passengers, noting for each complaint the type of disability and the nature of the complaint and exactly what measures they took to resolve the issues.
Yeah, I didn't know that that was required by law, and apparently JetBlue either didn't know either or did and still decided not to follow through with that because they weren't responding to complaints submitted in that regard.
Yes, it did say that blind passengers were not receiving assistance in boarding and exiting planes, and that JetBlue was not telling callers that the flights were going to be handled by a third-party entity other than JetBlue, so which you are required to do by law if you're using a third-party airline to handle some of your city-to-city flights. Amtrak's working with a company called Open Doors, and they're going to train nearly 8,000 employees of Amtrak in 17 different cities throughout the U.S. Now, Open Doors has trained airlines and their ground crews on handling different mobility equipment and wheelchairs efficiently, safely, and without damage. They've also done a lot of work on some of the cruise lines as well, bringing them up to speed. They are going to be riding the trains throughout the U.S. this year. And if they would like to hear your stories, if you've had maybe a negative experience or a problem riding Amtrak so that they can help bring the employees up to speed, it says you can email your Amtrak stories to ask@accessanything.net. That's ask@accessanything.net. A list of the best and worst college websites for blind students has been put together. John Gunderson at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign or Champaign-Urbana up there. I've been to that university, big school there. basically reviewed 183 universities and institutions, and it's a pretty detailed report, a lot of rankings, and it's hard to know what all those numbers mean, but you can read the results by going to our show notes page at where else but serotalk.com.
It's actually a pretty interesting read because they're ranking these sites on things like whether they have navigational headings, what the actual site design is like, any online applications that are used on the site, pictures, and several other things. And I think the University of Missouri was the highest ranked, and the U.S. Air Force online content was the worst, with the U.S. Navy being pretty well down there as well.
Interesting. Governments mandating website accessibility and then not following through. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah, not following through.
Dropbox 1.0 has been released, and well, that's good for Windows. You should not have any problems. However, it seems to break accessibility for Mac users. Find out Mac users cannot install because the buttons are not accessible, nor it appears that they can change the preferences very easily. So keep that in mind. Another article we found called Five Interesting Ways to Use Dropbox You Might Not Have Thought Of. Now, of course, the blind community has been using it to share music and other files that they may not legally be able to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peer-to-peer file sharing thing.
Right.
That, the legalities are, they're questionable. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. A little suspect there. A little shady. You know what I'm saying?
Shady, yes.
Yeah. But
if you want to be able to use Dropbox for legitimate purposes, there are several here. One of my favorites is to have a group of documents or files that are going to be edited or reviewed by multiple people, and just to have a folder for those things so that each person can easily be kept in the loop on that. You can also do things like your chat logs from your IM clients. You can point those to be stored in a Dropbox folder rather than where they reside by default, and that way you'll always have your logs. If you needed to look up something, somebody sent you info in an IM or whatever, and you needed to be able to check that out, you can do that wherever you are.
Of course, there's the original use, which is syncing files between all of your computers. And I would have to echo what you said about it's great for collaboration. If you're working on a similar project, whether it's yourself between home and work, or, you know, doing maybe audio production or just writing documentation, maybe you're updating help files for your company, whatever it may be, it is such a powerful tool for collaboration because any person can make a modification and all you users are updated with that information. So yeah, chat logs, saving gaming data, document folders, which you mentioned, teamwork for videos, that may be where you actually want to spend the money and get the 50 gig so you can actually do some serious data storage. And something I'm not familiar with, talking about watch folders, where you can actually use it to update photos you may be editing, or even to just drop some torrents in there from other locations and all of a sudden have your torrent client go out and get the files so they're waiting for you when you get home. Well, the NFB offers a new NLS Newsline NLS DTB downloader. I don't give them credit for coming up with creative names. I guess it does describe what it does, though. Basically, yeah, it's a tool that creates Daisy books that in turn you can copy onto your actual USB stick or the little gizmo you plug into the front of your NLS player. Basically, it makes a Daisy book of newspapers and other great magazines that the NFB is currently offering. And they do have some cool magazines and some cool newspaper stuff. However, unfortunately, there's some problems with the initial release. Now, they claim it's some issues on the server side that they have to fix, but then in the same document says, by the way, you might want to wait until we come up with an update release for it. So hopefully Scott White will let us know when that new updated version of it. It worked the first time I ran it, so I did see it in motion, and after that, it kind of failed to perform. So it's cool when they get it working right. It will be a nice tool to read your newspapers, and it's a great way to hear eloquence on that great speaker that, you know, that the NLS players have. So that'll be nice when they get it working. I think in that sense, it's pretty similar to the Potable service, which kind of does the same thing, and you can copy to your devices like the Victor and other readers. But this one's specifically for the NLS, so check that out if you like, and I think you'll be pretty happy with it. Well, let's see. What else do we have going on in other news here? You can download free magazines from APH. I think we mentioned this before, Reader's Digest, but they've also added a few, right? Or at least one more, right? Newsweek, I believe it is.
Yeah, there's Newsweek. I don't believe we talked about that in our previous mentions. And again, you do need to be an NLS patron to take advantage of this, but you don't download these from the NLS website. You'll do that from APH. And you can get details about how to get registered for that in the show notes at serotalk.com.
Yeah, so it's interesting that the NLS is reaching out and partnering with some third parties to bring additional content. There's still rumors about Audible, which would be cooler than cool, as they say. So we'll keep you apprised of any future resources for getting good stuff for your NLS player. Well, this is very popular in the SamNet chat rooms, and that's RS Games has gone live with their multiplayer Yahtzee, and they've also recently added blackjack as well, right?
So blackjack, yes. I'm not much of a card player. I have enjoyed Monopoly, but I think it's about time for me to play a little blackjack as well.
Well, our users are eating it up. They are.
Yep. And there are clients for both Windows and the Mac, so definitely good stuff.
Well, a few things on the BookSense front. First of all, the HIMSS announces the BookSense 2.2, and you can read about that. We have a link, Blind Bargains, where JJ talks about what's going on with that. Also, HIMSS is now offering $1,200 off for Note Taker and Daisy trade-ins. So you can read that story and find out maybe you want to switch your Note Taker and get a little financial incentive for doing so. You can read more over at serotalk.com. A few general interest stories to wrap up the podcast. Doctors are looking for UK blind citizens willing to trial a bionic eye. Ricky, talk about that one.
This is really interesting. They are doing it primarily for people who have retinitis pigmentosa, and this is a microchip actually made in Germany, and it's powered by something that is mounted behind the ear, I believe. I don't know if that's internally or what, but in any case, they're doing this trial in the UK for those who have either completely or almost completely lost their sight, but they need to have had vision for at least 12 years at some point. So this in its initial trial, people were able to actually read a bit of print. They could recognize the shapes of a cup and saucer on a table and things like that. And I think that their ability to recognize images gets even a bit better over time as the implant has been in for a while.
I don't know. I guess if you know, that appeals to you, certainly you can pursue that. We've got a link and you can learn more. I'm more interested in having one of those radios like, you know, Gilligan had, you know, when he whatever fell out of the tree and he became a radio and he could open his mouth and start playing rock and roll and turn his head and tune into a classical station. And I don't know, that was kind of cool.
Well, I'm more interested in this next device that we're going to talk about, which is a finger glove, works as a sort of multimedia magic wand for the blind. And basically the way that this thing works is it is a glove. So basically you wear this as a glove and it will send you information in Braille. So it just comes right to your fingertip, and you're able to get even news updates, and you can get some things based on your location that again is just sent right to your finger in Braille. And this to me is very cool. I've often wondered how computers and humans would sort of continue to evolve together. You know, right now we're sitting in front of a machine and interfacing with it in a pretty standard way. But at some point, there are going to be implants. We're going to be Borgified, as it were, and be able to have this type of information, whether it's Braille being sent to your finger or whether it's an implant which is sending images from your eye to your brain. And it just opens up all sorts of interesting possibilities.
But what about those of us without eyes being expected to use facial recognition for logging in? This is something that we can definitely see more of in the 21st century. And it looks like Facebook is deploying this as a means. So where does this leave us? Well, we could have CAPTCHAs or facial recognition. For those of us like myself who had their eyes removed, I don't know. It's looking a little sketchy, but have you seen the new Facebook page? I think most people now have finally updated. They kind of rolled it out over time, and I'm just curious about what that's doing for accessibility. A lot of sightlings, of course, are complaining anytime you start moving things around and people have to figure out where tasks they used to perform can now be done. But
honestly, I've stuck with the mobile site for Facebook, so I haven't really seen what they've done on the main page to either break or enhance accessibility. With facial recognition, though, I think this is a concern. For right now, there are some cases in which, in order to log in, you have to recognize and identify, say, one of your friend's photos. You know, you have to say, oh, this is so-and-so who is my friend, and therefore I have verified who I am. That's a huge concern. But Facebook is also using this recognition in kind of an interesting way. They're basically trying to auto-tag photos based on, let's say, you have your profile picture, which is tagged by default as you, and then somebody else posts a photo to their feed that appears to have the same features as you do, then Facebook may auto-tag you in that photo. That could be either really cool or quite disastrous. You might discover that you looked like someone who you didn't really wish you looked like. A photo of Rosie O'Donnell was tagged as you. Oops.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'd want. Well, this has actually been in place as far as if your password needs to be reset or if you get locked out of your account. One of the criteria is to identify three photos. And I saw this last summer with someone who got locked out, and he actually had to call his mom to tell him who the photos were of.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way you could use a service like Celona or whatever, or any sort of crowdsourcing application to help with that.
So again, it's a good tool for its intended purpose. It just locks us out. And, you know, so we will have to decide in what way we pursue this to make sure that we're not excluded from services via this technology. Well, it looks like New York City is experimenting with some accessible cab rides to cut costs for people with disability. What's going on there, Ricky?
Basically, what they want to do is, as it stands now, or as it stood before they started rolling this stuff out, any person with a disability who couldn't drive by themselves would be eligible for this special service where you would call and reserve a ride. And oftentimes you have to do that a week in advance, and you might not always get the pickup time you want, and so on. So what they want to do now is make things a little bit more cost effective by using their accessible service for those in wheelchairs who might need a lift on the van to be transported and things like that. And they're just going to give blind folks a debit card to use regular cab service, which means that they'll be able to call a cab just as anybody else would, but still have the price break that they would normally get for the accessible service.
And I'd like to hear from our many listeners, I'd like to hear your two cents on that. Because this issue I saw come up even back in the 70s, this whole concept where certain communities, people would actually get the cab companies to offer a discount for persons with disabilities. And there would always be a faction that said, no, we want to be equal. We want to pay the same as everyone else. So how do you feel about that? Would you like a discount saying, hey, you know, if I have to use a cab because I don't drive, I'm definitely spending more money than my sighted counterparts who may only use it on occasion, but I may have to use it every day to commute to and from work. So we'd like to hear from you.
Yeah,
resources at serotalk.com.
And I expect we'll get some very interesting responses because there are some people who will absolutely say, no, why should we get a break like that? And then there are others who perhaps a cab ride to work would cost, say, $40, for example, you're looking at $280 a week, well, $560 a week if you're going to and from work, which presumably you would be. That's considerably more than a car payment would cost. So I think there are points to both sides, because if you do demand special treatment, it's difficult to walk that line. You can't say, I want to be treated completely equally, well, except for this part.
I remember when I started in radio, I spent, out of all that I earned in a month, I spent 1 week's wages just in commuting to and from with a taxi. Now, someone could argue, a sighted person could say, well, that's what I spent on my car payment, you know, for my car and my insurance.
Right, but it isn't necessarily, because again, if you're spending, say, $15 to and from, an average car payment is about $350 a month or so, between $250 and $350. So depending on your cab fare to and from, you may very well be spending the same amount as you would on a car payment, but you might also live a lot further from your work, and it would take quite some time and a whole lot of expense to get to and from.
Right, and we're only using that cab to get to and from work. We're not using it to do any kind of errands or personal business. So, but anyway, we'd like to hear your 2 cents on this topic at resources@serotalk.com. I mean, transportation is just a big issue, and that's not going to change anytime soon. I'm glad to see they're taking some measures. I just hope they don't get hostility from the drivers that, oh, well, I have to offer this person a discount, which means maybe I get less of a tip. So we'll be curious to see how all that pans out. But I guess I always assumed, stereotype, that a city being that large, there would actually be greater transportation options, just like I remember how excited I was when I went to Chicago. And, I mean, you had buses almost every half hour. You could pretty much get anywhere on foot. But, you know, with the economy as it is, a lot of lines have been cut, or maybe there's less or no transportation on Sundays in a lot of communities. So anyway, we'd like to hear from you on those topics. Otherwise, we'll see you in 2 weeks, and join us Thursdays for our tech chats. And anything else, Ms. Ricky?
I think that's it from here. Happy New Year, everyone. See you in a couple of weeks.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.